welcome to another episode of Character Revealed. It's that show that, you know, reveals the character of lots of cool creative people and artists and that sort of thing. As always, it's me, your host, Dom, aka Brother Dom, all over the internet. And once again, I am joined by the leanest, meanest, cleanest co-host. Would you like to tell the people who it is that you are?
Hey, y'all, it's me. It's Stephanie, aka Captain Steph on Twitter, the Snowpeer on Tumblr, Hello Steph on Instagram. I contain multitudes. And, you know, we're back in the saddle, we're creating new content, TM, and we're here with yet another fabulous guest for all of you. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure.
My new friend.
Thank you, new friends. I'm Darcy. I don't have as many amazing titles. I felt like you were a little bit like Khaleesi there, Stephanie.
Hell yeah.
With all of your titles, I feel...
First of my name, Master of Brooklyn.
Exactly. I am Darcy.Farrow on Instagram. I think that's really all I have to tout. But yeah, I do more cool stuff. I always draw a blank on it when I'm
hey, that's totally all right.
About it.
We're gonna get into the details of all of your wonderful talents and abilities.
Let's do it.
So far, I know 3 things about you.
Okay.
Which is a very limiting thing to say to somebody. And I know more than 3 things about you. That'd be very strange to know 3 things about people because you know their name. But I know that you act.
Yeah.
You're an artist of the visual variety. And you are able to swallow fire, I think.
Yeah, I am a fire eater. And I always say fire manipulator.
Ooh. So. They're firebenders.
Firebender, yeah, I am. Weren't those the bad guys, though?
One time. I mean,
sometimes.
You know, it's hard to say. You know, sometimes empires do a little bit too many things, and, you know, sometimes you're in that empire and maybe try to vote away from it, but sometimes you get stuck. So, yeah, I'm sure there were some cool Fire Nation people,
right.
Maybe Fire Nation podcasters talking to their friends online. hypothetically
speaking. All right, well then I'll be a defector from the evil fire,
the evil empire
vendors.
Yeah.
I love it.
Good
Last episode we talked to a fellow actor of yours, our new friend Anne, and that's a good way to segue into some of the acting that you do. Again, disclosure to the audience, I know you through my partner Alex.
Yeah.
And you are also part of the same acting troupe. So would you like to tell us a little bit about the acting that you've done with Brawling Bar Theater?
Sure. First of all, I'm nowhere near as talented as Anne. So I'm just putting that out there right now. Anne is amazing. And your partner, Alex, also wonderfully talented. I think I get lucky sometimes. But I was very fortunate to, I met the director of Brawling Bar Theater through the Renaissance Festival and came in, I think, on their second or third show. His co-director of Brawling Bard was unable to do it, so I stepped in for the role for the Fringe Festivals, and it was the Midsummer play. And it was a lot of fun. I think that we're a very, I don't want to say super close-knit, but, you know, we're all friends, we all know each other from somewhere else, and so it just makes acting with the troupe super easy, super fun, and it's just, I think Alan's super talented. He comes up with some really great spin-offs of Shakespeare, so to speak, so I was really happy that I got to participate in this year's production, because I think last year was unable to, because just with the 9-to-5 and
yeah.
Other responsibilities.
Really, so
I didn't get to participate.
Your life's the worst.
Yeah.
Scheduling is always one of the hardest parts about doing. I feel like extracurricular is how they say it for school. I don't really know what we call it outside of that.
You know what? As an adult, I still say extracurricular because I like you, I just don't really know what else to call it. So
hobby time.
my special me time. No, that's something else.
It makes it sound naughty.
That's part of the schedule. There's so many things on the schedule. You include everything. You're like, there's only 24 hours in the day. That's why we all lose our minds. So totally right there with you.
I think that's one of the worst things about the story that they tell you, like the script that society feeds you, is like, for you to be a healthy individual, you have to do 9 to 5. You have to have hobbies and things that you do outside of there that you excel in. You have to exercise. You have to eat well. You need to meditate. You need to do all this level of self-care. And it's like the list goes on.
Like, bitch, when?
Yeah. And you're like, well, let's see. I work for 8 to 9 hours, if not more. I sleep for the same amount of time. Like, how am I supposed to fit everything else? And then, like, as an adult, you just feel like a failure. You're like, how am I not keeping up? Why do I suck so bad at everything? And I know that we're in the middle of, like, you know, plague year, but 2020, I think, was a very transformative year for me, where I was just like, you know what? I'm not going to live by that narrative anymore. Like, you just can't. You'll just drive yourself mad, you know? So
things that I talked about, or thought about, at least when I was younger, that, you know how you think you have everything figured out when you're 16 and you don't actually. Yeah. But I think I got lucky this one time, because I still believe this. I'm not going to chalk it up to intelligence. It was pure luck. But
Dom doesn't like to give himself credit for things.
Sometimes I don't know. Sometimes I do. Sometimes it depends on what the thing is. That said, I was always trying to take the sort of advanced courses in school. I went to a small school, so it's not like this is a self-brag too much or anything. But I remember being in middle school, and they're like, hey, you know, you have to do really good in these classes so you can be on the honors track in high school. And then, you know, that's when you'll get to just relax and just live life, because, you know, you've seen the movies. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I'm young. That makes sense. And then you get to high school, and like, cool, now that you're in these classes, you got to do really, really good so that you can get into a good school. And that's when you get to experiment and have your fun. You know, you've seen the movies. And I'm like, wait a minute. I've heard this before.
You've spun this web of lies for me before. It was the same thing. I hated it. It was like, you know, well, first of all, I was an uber dork in school.
Oh, welcome to us. Welcome.
Welcome to our nerdy.
Comrade.
On my own. Yeah. Woo. It was interesting times. And, you know, so the one identity that I felt that I had was like the kid that does well in school, you know, and it didn't come naturally, but it was like all that I had. Right. So I worked my butt off, and it was like, you know, be on honors roll, get a 4.0 grade point average. You're going to get scholarships. You can go to any school you want. It's going to be amazing. And so I got straight A's. I got my 4.0. I, you know, did all these clubs, and I was in Spanish National Honor Society, regular National Honor Society. I did all these murals for the art club and did things all around school. I volunteered at homeless shelters. I did everything that they just threw at me in the hopes that when I escaped and went off to college, I would, you know, it would all be different. I didn't get anything. got nothing. I'm like, college was just, it was art school. I went to the Art Institute, and it just sort of like, I don't know. I feel like the web of lies just slowly became untangled as I got older and older and older. And then I finally hit, you know, late 30s, and I was like, wait a minute, I've been duped.
It's weird. Yeah. Like, you get to school and they say, like, then in college, it's the same lies. They're like, hey, stop partying. You got to get a good job, but you'll be making great money with this track, so you can relax then. And I'm like, I don't believe this at all. Do you get the job? And that's about the time you start, you know, maybe meet people, having kids. And I'm like, wait a minute. If you have a kid, that severely changes, like, the calculus of how you do your life. Like, that's
an additional job.
Every parent that I've ever talked to, they've never said, oh, yeah, having a kid's easy. It doesn't take any time. You just live your life like you did before.
It is hard.
Never. So I'm like, so all that stuff they were telling you in middle school, just keep applying that. And then once your kids graduate from college and are self-sufficient, then you get to relax. You're like, wait a minute. that's a long time.
I know. I definitely getting to the point where I'm like, I don't want to talk super, you know, negative on our country, but
yeah. Feel free.
I'll be in good company once again.
Yeah, right? Seriously. I just like, how have we convinced ourselves that life begins at retirement? Like, I just feel like everyone else is like, yeah, we pick 3 or 4 months of vacation and we only work like 35 hour work weeks and whatever, and life's to be enjoyed. And then you come over to America and we're like, you must work until all of your organs have shut down and you can't walk.
And then you won't have healthcare to fix them.
Only then does life begin.
Oh. Well, that's why I'm starting to, you know, believe in corporate culture. They're not lying when they say that you're a family. It's just that you don't want to be a family and you haven't seen your family in weeks, but it's all right because you have everybody in the office.
Oh, I know. I'm always amazed. And again, I know I'm not old, but I feel old. Like, I feel like I'm like 50 something. Like, I know that 38's not old, but like, I see younger people come into corporate America, and like, I've had coworkers who were like, I want to go work for Google because they have slides in their office and they,
oh my god, you couldn't pay me enough to work for Google.
Yeah, and you can do all this stuff. And I'm like, it's to brainwash you so you never leave. They only, like, it's not because they love you, it's because they want your soul.
Yeah, we have a gym here. We have a doctor on staff here. We have all this food. It's like, wait a minute. Those all sound like reasons I would need to leave. They're like, no, no, you don't need to leave. You can just stay here forever.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we should have all caught the hint when they changed their slogan from don't be evil. Like, that's no longer their company slogan. And it's like, oh, so what are we doing now, guys?
Just a little bit of evil as a treat.
It's like, moderately evil's okay. Google, making chaotic evil popular since 2020.
Ah, yes. Good old... Everything comes back to the alignment chart, and it's more and more relevant every day.
It really is.
Vote for us. We're lawful evil. I guess that's an improvement. I don't know.
I don't know anymore. I really don't. I think my dream is to, like... I'm not an outdoorsy person, but I keep reading articles that are like I love nature. Don't get me wrong. I just know that I can't survive in it by myself. Like, I'm smart enough to know my limitations of survival. Like, I'm not a naked and afraid survival person, but I keep seeing like articles and it's like, this small island in Ireland will like pay for you to live there because they need someone to run the coffee shop. But you have to like have survival skills because there's only like 60 people on the entire island. And I'm like, maybe I could do that. Maybe I could swim that.
Maybe hedge my bets.
Yeah. That's how you know I'm getting desperate in my like need to escape. I'm just like, maybe our Scotland work. Or Ireland's, you know, the middle of the forest is the place for me.
That could be the way. Our one friend keeps pitching the idea to us. And I think he's serious and joking, like, at the same time. Like, what if we all just moved away, like, started our own little commune, just, like, get rid of all the internet and just go over there for a while? I'm like, I like video games, but that's starting to sound a little better every day, where it's like, just forget all this other stuff, let's just go be in the woods and build our own community. Kind of sounds...
I know, right? It's sad. Nice. I didn't think I'd ever be there, but here I am.
Yeah, like, this is, like, I'm very much of the same kind of ilk as you in terms of, like, my interaction with nature and knowing my limits.
Yep.
But I just booked a vacation in, like, rural Pennsylvania for the beginning of next month because I live in Brooklyn and I have been in my own apartment in Brooklyn pretty much nonstop since March. And I'm going to take drastic action if I don't get to leave soon.
Don't blame you.
See a tree. And like the amount of excitement that I had when I saw that there is a state park near where I'm staying, like I was like, I'm gonna go hiking, I'm gonna swim in the river. It's like, who am I?
Who have I become? I'm gonna hug a tree.
I'm just gonna like sit outdoors.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see something besides the construction across the street that's just like kicking up dust and literally changing the foundation of the apartment I'm in.
I was watching,
and this is just for anybody listening, it's a fun thing. They had like a little bulldozer, and I kept every now and then feeling like a rumbling. And I knew the people downstairs were moving. I'm like, are they just picking up and dropping everything that they're, what are they doing down
there?
They're
really serious movers. They get into it.
Yeah, I was like, they seem like extreme people. They have hiking boots. Maybe they like to throw their furniture. Who knows? I just saw this guy lifting up like a metal, like a slat, like a a sheet and then just dropping it. And I'm like, are they trying to reposition it or what? But every time it dropped, I felt it shake. And I'm like, they're building apartments, and by doing that are destroying the ones that I'm currently in. Trees wouldn't do this to me.
Yeah.
They just give you oxygen and birds and stuff.
You wouldn't stab me in the back like this
to me.
Oh man, it's seriously, it's weird. I have like that whole like your building like falling out from under you is like a weird fear that I have, like this whole sinkhole thing of like, you know, like people are just like sleeping in their beds and then like the whole ground gives out and then they're in the earth. And I have a friend that lives in, she lived in Canada in Montreal, and they had like the hillside that they were on was going down the hill, and like the side, but it was doing it very slowly. And like the side of their apartment like was coming apart to the point where they had like an inch crack to like the outside world in like sub-zero Montreal temperatures in the middle of the winter. And I just like every day I'm like, oh my gosh, she's going to fall into the earth. Like it's just so paranoid. So now I'm going to worry about you, Dom, and Alex getting ready to like fall into the street. I'll be like, oh no, it's going to happen to them.
Is it an indictment of like how just like sad life is right now that I'm like, oh, Montreal, they had a crack in their apartment. Like, oh, but that means it's cold up there, so they probably didn't get bugs or anything in there, so that's not that bad, because we'd have like, not to make it a competition, but I'm like, oh no, crack outside and there's just bugs coming in, no way. But then you said it's cold, I'm like, oh, you can just put more hoodies on, that's fine.
That's fine. Every once in a while, and it's weird to me because it doesn't happen every time the subway comes through. It doesn't even happen regularly enough, like, that it could be a certain train and not another one. But I live, like 100 yards from my subway stop. And every once in a while, especially now that I've been home and, like, sitting at my desk at the window all the time, like, every once in a while, I just feel like a very gentle rumbling. Like, I know I probably asked for this moving to New York, but wow.
I feel like no matter where you go, there's always something you're like, I knew there were risks, but this doesn't seem like it was one of the possible risks of being
here. Man, the risks I took were calculated, but man, am I bad at math. Like,
I think it's that, or like the other thing that's always been like, if you move somewhere, I've always been like, what if it's haunted? And like, I try to be like tough and being like, I don't believe in ghosts. But then like, I remember buying our house and being like, what if it's haunted? So yeah, it's subways, it's bugs, it's ghosts, it's there's always some.
There's got to be something. Yeah, there was a period while I was looking for an Airbnb like within like rental car driving distance of the city, and like the one that I kept requesting like wasn't responding to my like, please accept my humble like sad self into your into your apartment for the. For the week, like emails, like the messages you sent in Airbnb. So I was trying to find someplace else, and like all the places that I found were like the most cursed images, like just like taking my life in my hands.
Like, it probably is like spiritually. Serial killer's house. Like I'm gonna die. I had an experience once driving back from Canada in the middle of a blizzard, and the friend who I was with, is actually the same friend that lived in Montreal.
I say Canada's a theme, but it's the same person.
Yeah, friend. Canada's a theme here. Please, Canada, if you listen to this, I don't care how many scary stories I tell about you, please take me. Please.
please.
But anyway, we were driving back, and it was like the middle of a blizzard, and her husband at the time, now her ex, he was very insistent that we just keep going. You know, we'll be fine. It's fine. And like, we go to get on the turnpike and they're like, we can't let you on. We're sorry. And he was like, we'll find another entrance. And so like, we drove until finally someone let us on the turnpike. And I just remember like being like, we're going to die. And sure enough, within like a mile of being on the turnpike, we hit a patch of ice. We slammed into a snowbank. The car was totaled. This tow truck driver finally came. We were really close to the ticket booth. So we like stayed with the ticket booth people. And finally this tow truck driver came and he was like, I don't know what to tell you guys. All the hotels are filled. there's nowhere to go. I can take you to a truck stop. And we're like, wherever, just take us wherever. So he takes us to this truck stop, and the woman running the truck stop was like, oh, I just got a call. There's a new, there's a room at this motel that you can take them. And we're like, okay. And we all get back in the tow truck with the guy. And he's got like a, we're like at this point, we're sort of like, we made it back into like, I don't know if it was like Rochester, New York area or back in towards Pennsylvania somewhere, but we're in the middle of nowhere. And we get in this tow truck and he goes, folks, I don't want to alarm you.
Oh, no.
I've lived here my whole life. I've never heard of this motel. And my friend's husband was like, eh, it'll be fine. Just take us there.
And that guy was like rolling the dice.
Yeah. I mean, and it was a motel in the middle of cornfields. And I was like, we're in a horror movie. We're going to die. It's going to be like, they're going to eat us. They're going to just kill us. We're going to die. I was just convinced like this is a horror movie waiting to happen. But twist ending, they ended up being the nicest people in the world. They made us soup and like brought us all this food, and we survived to live the day. So I was expecting a Hills Have Eyes moment, and I came away with, you know, loving
a Hallmark movie.
It was really, but it was a roller coaster of emotions. But yeah, I can understand the scary Airbnb thing of like, I might be murdered.
Who can say?
It's cool.
If you haven't made at least one decision in your life, where you're like, you know what, this might not end well. Like, are you even living? And exactly. It doesn't even have to be risky. Like the Airbnb we stayed at, like as a group of friends, was like some dude's RV and like. Rural area PA, and our friend that pitched this like, hey, how about this camper? And I looked at this camper and just like everything about it, and I looked down at myself and I said the words, and I'm not ashamed of this, I'm like, guys, I'm not gonna lie, I think I'm too black to be like taking a risk like this. Like, this is a camper in rural area. And they're like, yeah, but like, I think we should do it, we'll be a group. And I said, you know what, I'd rather die with friends then like alone, and took the risk, and it was like some of the nicest people I've ever met. So,
well, there you go.
Like, I was literally thinking about, like, we went back the next year, and I was literally thinking about when I was making this reservation, just like shooting our buddy Steve, who is totally our buddy now, like a Airbnb message, just be like, hope you and your wife are doing all right in the pandemic.
Yeah, really good people. And I guess that's the risks you have to take to meet some nice people.
You know, you have to
find out that sometimes people are better than you expect them to be.
You know, you get close to death and walk away with some new Airbnb besties.
Hell yeah.
Airbed and besties.
That's what they're called. Airbed and besties. I love it.
But yeah, you were saying a little bit earlier, sort of about, you know, meeting Alan like through the Ren Fair and stuff like that. What did you do at the Ren Fair?
So, when my first, I'm going to just totally take you on a little story ride here.
Hey, we're here for it.
I'm an oversharer. If there's a fourth thing you can learn about me, Dom, it's that I overshare and talk way too much. So here we go.
Awesome.
So, that's what a podcast is for.
When I went to my first Renaissance Festival when I was 14 and, loved it. Like, loved it. I don't know. I just, something about the campiness of it all. I'm a big shtick person. I love like the, you know, old Hardy Har Har, Monty Python kind of like stupid humor. I don't know what it is. I'm just drawn to the insanity of it all. So probably, I think it was like 2005, I had convinced Dylan that we should work there.
Okay.
I was like, let's do it. Let's work here. Let's go. Let's find what they're missing and we'll be that. Like, that way they can't turn us away. So I decided they did not have a belly dancer. So I was going to learn belly dancing to be the belly dancer at the Pittsburgh Renaissance Festival. And sure enough, I did. So I
be the change you want to see in the Renaissance Fair.
I was like, I will make a spot for me. So I went around the city of Pittsburgh, went to a bunch of different belly dancers, and was like, this is what I want. Can you help me? And a handful of them were like, no. And then, one was amazingly brilliant, and she is the Canada friend that I keep referring to. Her name is Claire, and she was like, totally, I'll help you. Like, I will help you achieve your dreams, girl. You do you. And I was like, awesome, let's do this. So sure enough, I worked my butt off. Dylan and I wrote this like comedy show, and we pitched it at the auditions, and we made it in. And then we did a couple promotional events, and then they went bankrupt and closed the fair. And I was devastated. And I think the next year or the year after, someone new bought the fair.
I remember when that happened. That was terrible. Yes.
And so we went back and auditioned again, and they would not give us a stage show. Because we weren't really anybody to them. And the person who had bought it was sort of like a big name guy, I guess, in the Renaissance Festival world.
Very niche talent.
Yes. So the agreement that we had was we would be allowed to do a shortened show anywhere in the street that we wanted to at any time of the day. And so we're like, all right, yeah, that'll work. So that's what we did. So our first year, we were street cast, and we played, and it is not a proper term now, but back in 2006, it was not deemed an improper term, and I think we've all educated ourselves. So I will say now we are Romani, or the Roma, which if people don't know, they are your traveling wonderfully diverse group of people. So we were those characters. And that's when I had started introducing the fire eating. I was still sort of like learning the fire eating, but I had the belly dancing under, you know,
you had that lockdown,
you know, hardcore. So the next year we asked for a stage show again, and we were told no. I'm like, okay, not a problem. Like, we'll do the street cast thing again. And then about, I would say, 3 weeks before opening date, I got a call from the entertainment director while I was shopping at, does anyone remember the store Dots, where it was like everything was like $10?
I do remember Dots. I didn't Dots. Shop there, but I remember seeing it at the rest in peace to the Century 3 Mall.
Yeah. The memory is just plain as day. I was in Dots and I'm shopping, and I get a call from the entertainment director, and he's like, would you be able to throw together a belly dancing stage show by opening day? What would you need to make that work? And I'm like, well, I'm gonna need other belly dancers. Can I play canned music? And they're like, no, you know, you can't have canned music. I'm like, okay, well then I need musicians. And they're like, well, you know, what do you want pay wise? And I had no clue what stage act should be making. So I was just like guessing. I was like, $100 a person a day. He's like, okay, I think we can do that, as long as you don't go over, like, I think it was like 5 people I was allowed to have.
So what's a proper?
It was rate? Not. Fast forward, I came to learn that I was getting hoodwinked. So I pulled a show out of my ass in 3 weeks. I pulled in another dancer that was in the same troupe that I was in at the time. I pulled in one of the students of the troops. And then I found a girl that we knew through the belly dance community who we knew did drumming. I pulled her in. And then I found another musician, a clarinet guy on Craigslist. He was a real interesting fellow. We can dive into that yeah, later. Every morning, we'll dive into it now. Every morning I had to pick him up because he didn't have a car. And he lived in Lawrenceville, which was probably about, we lived in Highland Park. So it was relatively close. Yeah. So I was like, I'll pick you up, not a problem. And every morning I pick him up, and he would have a fresh bar of fudge. And Dom, do you remember what the name of the fudge place in the Lawrenceville, the strip district is?
Literally, you could not have said anything in the world that would have been more, I feel like, a non-sequitur.
Yeah, it's just like a big bar of fudge. Every day, or like every Saturday and Sunday, pick him up. He's got fudge. And it's from this fudge place that's, you know, in like the strip district in Pittsburgh. And
are they still there?
Expensive. I just don't remember what the name of it is now.
I wonder if it's the place that goes to conventions, because they do have good fudge.
Oh, yeah. There's a place that comes to the, like, the anime conventions that literally, like, they had the smartest idea, like, to come sit in the dealer's room full of all the, like, nerd shit and just be like, actually, we're here selling chocolate-covered pretzels exactly. and fudge.
You are our target market. Yeah, 100%. So it's just fudge. And he's always offering it to us. And we're always like, yeah, awesome. We're eating fudge for breakfast. You know, woohoo, we're adults, whatever. And the like last weekend, no, he didn't make it all the way through. He only did, I think, like the first three weekends. And then he sort of fell off the face of the earth. And I had to pull in another stage act to fill in for him. But anyway, so about 3 weeks in, I pick him up. And I'm like, so out of curiosity, where do you get this fudge from? Like, you always have new fudge. And he's like, oh, I go dumpster diving. They always throw away all this fudge. And I'm like, fuck, for 3 weeks I've been eating trash fudge. And I didn't have it. God damn it. So.
Why was it so? So this man was dumpster diving for just.
The fudge.
Fudge that they hadn't touched.
Yeah.
So it was like on that weird cusp of like totally clean, except for the fact that it's in a dumpster.
Yeah, except for the fact that it's been sitting in a dumpster all night.
It's so weird. It's such a weird thing to do and not tell people.
I know.
Like, I feel like that's like the first warning you give is like, hey, like, I'm going to eat this and you can see me eating it, like, so that you know that I'm like not trying to punk you, but this is perfectly good fudge, but I did take it out of a dumpster.
Yeah, I feel like that's just something you need a disclaimer. Like
a small courtesy disclaimer.
Yeah, no judgment. You want to eat dumpster fudge? Totally cool. But let me decide for myself if I want to eat dumpster fudge.
Like dumpster fudge with Darcy is going to have to be the episode title.
I mean, yes. Point one, yes. Point two, if I watched a guy eat dumpster fudge for like 3 weeks... Even knowing that, part of me is going to be like, he hasn't gotten sick yet, so maybe there's something. And I'd be willing to accept
it. Too dumpster
yeah,
fudge.
At one point, I'd be like, maybe, but, oh, man, I'd like to know.
Yeah, I was just shocked. I was like, okay, well, that happened. I mean, it was decent fudge. I wouldn't have guessed that it was in a dumpster a few hours before it entered my mouth, but it was.
And I still wonder, is that even the weirdest part about that story? And I don't think it is. I think it's just the fact of having fudge, just having it ready with no explanation is weirder than how he got it.
Exactly. Hey, guys.
That's so strange.
So, yeah.
Just your regular Craigslist
kind of guy, you know?
Clarinet guy.
Yeah. It's, ooh, yeah.
The people you can meet on the internet are on such a range of types of people.
You gotta love it. But yeah, so I, dumpster clarinet guy and a help of some lovely ladies from the Pittsburgh belly dance community, we pulled this show out of our butt and people loved it. We would be packed every show. And, you know, I was really excited because I was like, this is like my dream. I love entertaining people. I love making people smile. I love making people laugh. It just makes me feel good about myself that I'm like bringing joy into the world. And I'm, you know, doing this thing that I love so much. And I met so many wonderful people through it. Some of my closest friends I've met through the Renaissance Festival. And the season came to a close. And I remember sitting at my day job for the next season. And I got a call from the new entertainment director. And at this time, I had learned from one of the other stage acts that the going rate for a stage show in Renaissance festivals is no less than $300 a person per day.
That guy had no problem just like taking that low offer.
Yeah.
that's upsetting.
So I'm like, okay. So I was like, all right. And I'm trying to be diplomatic about it. And I'm like, obviously we did it for super low, and I can't now come in and be like, well, I could have. As I grow older, I now learn that I could have. But timid Darcy was still sort of hanging around a little bit. And I was like, okay, well, I can't call them and be like, what the F, I demand this. I'll just ask for a little bit more. You know, like, can we baby step our way to $300 a day?
Right.
So the new entertainment director called me. I was at work. And she said, you know, we want to bring your show back. People really liked it. You know, what would your rate be for this year? And I said, well, I understand that we were making really low rate last year, and I would like to baby step us up to the current going rate, but I realize I can't make that jump all in 1 year. Would you be able to give us just $50 more? So up to $150 a person, you know? And she's like, oh yeah, let me call you back. And I was like, okay. And not this 15 game. Minutes goes by, she calls me back, and she's like, we're not going to have you back this year.
Oh, geez. And they're really just trying to get a show on the cheap.
Yeah. And so I was devastated, and I talked to all my friends, you know, in the belly dance community, and they were outraged. And this wasn't the first time that they had done this to belly dancers. Years prior, there were a bunch of belly dancers from the Pittsburgh community that worked there, but it was far before my time, and I wasn't really familiar with the fact that they had sort of gone through this already. And so they were like, well, we're going to blacklist them because they just keep using and abusing us. So the Pittsburgh community blacklisted the Pittsburgh Renaissance Festival. And I felt really supported. Oh, like, yes, like, this is awesome. So what they did is they brought in a belly dancer from Greensburg, which, you know, is relatively close. And, you know, I can't blame her. I can't be mad at her. Like, I get it. It was dangled in front of my face too, right? Like, you love to entertain. There's something about that environment that just, like, is fun and whatever. And someone puts it out there and you're like, oh my gosh, yes, this is awesome and amazing. And I'm sure they did to her.
I get to do the thing I love and get paid for it. And then you're like,
so she had it for several years. And then through the grapevine, I had learned that she was bringing in some dancers from the Pittsburgh Renaissance Festival or from the Pittsburgh belly dance scene. And part of me was hurt because I was like, I mean, this is like years later at this point, right? This is like probably like, gosh, like 5 or 6 years later. But, you know, I'm like slightly hurt because I'm like, eh, these people were supposed to like have my back. And now they're sort of like one by one, sort of like going there. But what I was finding out is like she wasn't paying them. She was like getting them to almost like volunteer because they were only paying her. So it's like, I don't, and this is what drives me crazy about like super rich people is like they somehow convince people that like they're doing you a favor by using and abusing you. And it like trickles like down.
Paying you exposure.
And so it was like, you know, she's barely getting any money. And now she's convincing more people to come in and help her because they want more dancers and they want it to be bigger and they want it to be better. But she doesn't have any budget to work with. So now people are volunteering their time and, you know, and it's happening again. And I was like, you know what? Like at this point, I was sort of retiring from the belly dance community. And I was like, this isn't my battle to fight anymore. You know, I was sort of hurt, but I tried to let it go because I know they weren't doing it to spite me. I just knew that they were falling for the same thing that I fell for. And then she eventually left and another dancer from the Pittsburgh community took over for her. And she loves it and that's her thing. And, you know, again, it's like I sort of have that little bit of like, hey guys, like that makes me feel not awesome that you guys did that. But in the next breath, I know you're not doing it to spite me. I know you're doing it because of the same reasons I initially did it. So it's just sort of something that like I try to like get over, but it is sad going and like seeing it and being like, that used to be my show and it's not, and it probably won't ever be again, but you know, it is what it is. But that's sort of my Renaissance Festival tale for you. a very long
that, like, it like really that hits a lot for me because I like my industry is historically like comically low paid, especially given that we all are expected to live and work in New York City. And I didn't even negotiate when I took the job offer at my current company because I like was so thankful, like the position I have, like they pay you peanuts, but they like 500 people apply for every job kind of thing. So, so grateful to get it. And then I found out that like I was making literally the minimum they could offer me, like didn't even think to negotiate or anything. And it's just like you want to like look back and like kick yourself, but also like you didn't know any better. It's it's so frustrating.
It's so frustrating. I mean, that even happened for my professional corporate job. I had when I was at the Art Institute, I was a senior getting ready to graduate. I was doing school full time. I was working part time at Kmart. Woo, at the jewelry counter.
Yeah.
And I got an internship working for a public relations firm here in Pittsburgh. And it was stipend. So I was getting next to nothing for this internship. I think I got $700 for like 6 months of work. And I made myself valuable. It's sort of the same thing that I did with the Renaissance Festival, right? I was like, I'm going to find what they need and do that. And then when it comes time to let me go, they're going to be fools to let me go. So there was a client that no one wanted. They were just needy and a sort of a pain in the butt to work with. And everyone avoided them. It wasn't glamorous design work. It was like, ugh, whatever. But I saw that and I took over that client. And I jumped through all their hoops. I learned how to make barcodes. I was the only one in the company that knew how to make, like, generate barcodes and do this. And, you know, I made myself indispensable. And then my internship was over and they offered me a position and they offered me $22,000 a year. And I didn't know any better. I didn't know what I should be getting. And I'm like, oh, yeah, totally. And I come to find out, like, beginning wages were like in the 30s, you know, and I'm here I am like barely surviving, you know, they're making, I remember seeing the billing chart once and it was like what they build clients for you to work on their project.
That's the worst thing to see.
And they were charging clients, I think $85 an hour for me to work on it. And I'm barely making like $13 an hour or whatever, you know, that is. I think it's less than that if you do the math and everything. Math is not my strong point, obviously. So yeah, I feel you, Stephanie. It's like you don't know any better. And you would think that these people are supposed to have your back. And instead they're just like, you know, like the evil James Bond villains, like, you know, putting their fingertips together like,
I could tell you some horror stories about the folks who run our HR department, but that's us. That's for another
podcast.
But yeah, to put it in, I don't know when that job was, but to put it in context for you, I was hired in at $33,000 in 2017 in New York, and I was paying at the time $1,600 a month in rent.
Yeah,
see, like these things all sound like. If they were in a book, we'd be like, man, they're getting really lazy with the dystopian fiction. A little on the nose, wouldn't you say? And then you're like, no, it's on the nose because it's true. It's just real life.
Yeah, yeah. It's just really amazing, like, how much people will just, corporate America will just rip you up and spit you out. And I think that was one of the valuable lessons that I took away from my parents was always like, I think my father said to me at some point, he was like, always put you first because they're always going to put themselves first. Like,
oh yeah.
You're replaceable. You're just a number.
It's unfortunate that they see you that way. I got into like a soft argument with like a manager, like not my manager, but you know, the level of my manager, but a different department. And it wasn't like hostile or anything. It was kind of like talking over drinks sort of situation. And he's like, yeah, I don't, you know, back when millennials was the buzzword because that's who was being hired, not because people just assume anyone younger than them is a millennial.
Oh my God.
But he's like, you know, I wonder, like, why do millennials jump jobs so much? You know, like, you know, I'm proud to be at a company for like my whole life. I'm like, honestly, man, like, first off, we're like not loyal to people just out of the sake of it, which, you know, a lot of us are like happy with where we're at and we want to stay there if at all possible. But for a lot of people, there's no getting raises or anything like that. And a lot of us were saying like, hey, you know, if I quit this job and applied for this exact job that I'm in right now, I now have the qualifications to be the next level up, but I won't get promoted as long as I stay here. So yeah, the only way to get more money is to like take like lateral moves basically, but like their promotions if I go to another company. And that's why people leave. You know, you'll see people leave, they'll be like at 5 jobs in 10 years or something. And it's like, yeah, because they just wanted to get promoted. I don't think they necessarily had a problem with any of the environments they were at. You know, a lot of people like the jobs they're at. That's why they stay as long as they do. But, you know, when the cost of living goes up, but the wages don't, or you're expected to do more or perform at a higher level, it's kind of like, yeah, you know, like, what's corporate America trying to do to me? Like, I just want to do my 9-to-5, go home, work out, and pretend that I'm not a failure later.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, it's definitely like, another thing I always took away that my father told me was, you know, there's two kinds of people in the world, people who live to work and people who work to live. And you have to decide which one you want to be, you know, and I want to work to live my life. I don't want to live just to go to work every day. So, you know, I
preach that.
Do have, you know, loyalty to the company that I'm at to an extent. But once that loyalty starts being detrimental to my life, then, you know, you really do need to sort of like look at it. And unfortunately, you know, there's so many people who don't have the luxury of that. They know that they're in a shitty situation, but the way that the cards have been stacked against them prevents them from, you know, getting out or doing better. It's really sad. And I am very thankful for, you know, the fact that I'm not white at that position, you know, that I am really lucky with where I work now. And I do, you know, feel like I have people who, you know, care about my well-being here now. But yeah, as a whole, I definitely do not have a fond place in my heart for corporate America.
You're in good company. To go to something, you know, try to shift wild gears to,
yeah, totally,
you know,
bring
some smiles back, you know, because I'm starting to feel like, oh man, yeah, this is all true.
Sorry, I'm being a downer.
No, it's totally all right.
It's okay. It's the stuff corporate America being a downer.
I do want to ask, what made you decide to get into fire eating?
Yeah, I got to know the whole backstory here.
I want to learn about, like, these fire manipulation tricks.
Sure. So Dylan, my husband, we lived in a very horrible apartment in the South Hills. It was when we were getting ready to do the Renaissance Festival after the new owners had purchased it. We were trying to come up with things that we could add to our act. And he was boasting about how he could eat fire. And he used to eat fire in high school, and he used to do the human blockhead. And I, being the ever supportive wife, was like, bull fucking shit. No, you did not. I am calling shenanigans on this right now. And he was like, no, seriously, seriously. And I was like, all right, prove it. I need to see this to believe it. So he told me everything he needed to make a torch. And I was like, all right. So we went to Home Depot. We bought all of the stuff. I made him get in the bathtub because I was convinced he was going to light himself on fire. So I was like, you're doing it in the bathtub so I can like turn on the water if I need to. And so he gets in the bathtub and he proceeds to light the torch on fire, lift it up, and he gets probably within, I would say, 6 inches of his face, and the torch is just wobbling all over the place, and he's like, I can't do it. And I was like, ha, ha, ha. I knew it. I knew you couldn't do it. I knew it. And he's like, but I swear I can do the human blockhead. I can. And I was like, all right, like, show me that one. So we did the human blockhead, and I was like, okay. So we table it. That's that. Probably, I would say, 6 months later, we go to the dentist. And I've never had a dentist do this before. I don't know why this dentist did this. I've told this story to several people, and everyone I tell it to, they're like, I've never had a dentist like, do that. So I'm not sure like what this guy's thing was. But he measured how wide we could open our mouths. Yeah, I know, right? Like, everyone's like, that's never happened to me. So Dylan could only open his mouth like 33 millimeters, I think. And I could open mine like 55. And dang. I can fit my whole fist in my mouth. It's my party trick. It's what I do at stupid drunken parties. I'm like, watch me put my fist in my mouth. So...
So I got to assume Q listeners trying to like look at their fists like, how can I do this?
So we're on the way home and he's like, well, since you have such a big mouth, maybe you should be the fire eater. And I am a competitive person. And I said, challenge accepted. So that weekend we went, there was a magic store here in Pittsburgh on the south side. And we went, I bought a book on fire eating. And I read it and I started practicing with just like getting the torch in my mouth, not on fire, and then proceeded to fire. And I just taught myself how to do it in the living room like normal people do on Friday nights. And that was my thing. And that was the only thing I could do. You know, what do you guys do? We shove nails in our heads and fires in our mouths. It's cool.
Why not?
It's, you know, what else are you going to do? And so I couldn't do anything else. And it was so frustrating to me. Like, I would watch videos of this fire eater from Coney Island. Her name is Insectivora. And she was like my idol. I was like, I want to be able to do everything that she's doing. Why can't I figure it out? Why is it not working? And that was all I had. Every trick that I tried from the book, besides the simple extinguish, I could not get to work. And my friend Claire at the time was living in Los Angeles, and I found that there was a school in San Francisco that had everything to do with fire. Whatever fire art you wanted to learn, they taught classes in it. Fire eating, fire breathing, blacksmithing, you know, welding. Just if fire was involved, you could go to the school. And
that's amazing.
Yeah. And I was just like, I'm doing it. I'm going to do it. So I purchased the first level fire eating course and the second level fire eating course that involved more of like the manipulation and the extra tricks of the trade. And I hopped on a plane and I flew out there, and my friend Claire drove down from Los Angeles, and we stayed at a mutual friend's house in Oakland. And she drove me to the school every day and picked me back up. And that was it. I learned how to do everything, learned what I was doing wrong, how to do it better. And from there, it just became my thing. I really enjoy it. Again, going back to like bringing magic to people and happiness to people, it just, you know, I feel like a lot of people feel like, you know, in the entertainment world, so to speak, like fire eaters are a dime a dozen. But so the normal person or your layman, it's not, you know, and so to remind yourself of like, and I felt the same way with belly dancing. Like, I always tell people you could spit in the city of Pittsburgh and hit a belly dancer. There's just a million of them. And so you get, you know, in your head that like, oh, well, no one wants to see it. It's boring because everybody does it. And then you have to remind yourself like, no, not everybody does it. You know, just because there's a large community, there's an even larger community of those that don't. So that sort of started my fire eating career. We ended up starting a sideshow with one of our really good friends from the Renaissance Festival. And first, we weren't going to bring the fire into it because we thought that it was a limitation. And it does, in some ways, hinder us on locations because the city of Pittsburgh has a very strict fire code. It's annoying, but I can go back to that later. So, yeah, we tried some like mind reading stuff and this, that, the other thing. but we were working a show for a historical railroad, and it was like a steampunk event. And where they had us stationed, we were really having trouble keeping a crowd because our show was 30 minutes long and the trains would come every 20 minutes. So we'd get within 10 minutes of doing our hat line and we'd lose our whole audience because people had their tickets, they had to get on the train. So it became really frustrating for us. And I was like, we just need to scrap the show. We just need to do like high visibility things that are really breathtaking. Grab people, get them in, get their money, get them on the train. And so I had brought along my fire stuff. And so I just started doing the fire stuff. And the attention that we were getting was amazing. And so it was like, okay, fire definitely needs to be part of this act. So we added it in, and the rest is sort of history.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Bada bing, bada boom. Yeah.
Now, that totally is a cool talent. So, like, it is weird to think about the things that within your industry or group that you're in seem very common, but to people that just aren't in it, they're like, whoa, this is the coolest thing. I haven't seen this before. So,
yeah, I mean, I feel like that happens to a lot of people. You know, I know my sister, this is like really random. My sister really loves makeup, and she really wanted to do like this YouTube makeup channel. And she asked if I wanted to do it with her. Now, I am not that into makeup. I suck at it. Everyone always is like, really? Because you always have such fun makeup for your belly dancing. And I'm like, because it's stage makeup. But like, just because it's stage makeup doesn't mean I'm like doing that in everyday life. But sure. She's my sister. I love her. I wanted to do something fun with her. So I told her I would do it with her. But she kept like telling me, she's like, you know, you need to make solo videos. You need to do this. And I was really struggling with it because I'm like, there's a million people on YouTube putting makeup on. Who cares if I put on makeup? Like, I couldn't get over that in my head. I just was like, and even now, you know, to this day, if there's like things I want to do, you know, I have an idea for like a Jane Austen podcast that I want to do. And I have, you know, other ideas. And I always have to tell myself that there's room for me too, because I think my confidence level always is like, but why do they need to hear from me? There's a million other people who are doing it that are better than me. And I think it happens to so many people where we're our own worst critics, and we need to like get out of our heads and be like, there is room for me, because there might be a million other people doing it, but none of those million other people are me. And I have something of value to offer too. So.
Yeah, that's part of with what ours, what we do. You know, there's millions of podcasts, and everybody, it's kind of a joke that half the podcast guests you do are just people talking about their own show on other shows. But part of it for me, at least selfishly, was, you know, I'll get to talk to a lot of people that I think are cool and that I admire. You know, we've had some guests on that I've looked up to or looked at their content for many years, or I've worked with them sort of in a roundabout way. But if nothing else, whether we're getting a lot of viewers or not, it's like, oh man, you've got to talk to some really cool people. So if nothing else, I'm happy about that part. But on the other hand, you know, the other joke people make about podcasters is that it's just five white dudes sitting in a circle talking about old like Star Trek or Star Wars episodes. So I'm like, well, hey, at least we're not that, like, we're technically a couple steps removed from that. But I think our perspectives on things, you know, I know a lot of people do interviews, but I feel like we try to do a little bit more than just, hey, how did you get into this? You know, we talked about dumpster fudge today, so I don't think
exactly. When else are you gonna do that?
You know, so, you know, we try to approach it with, you know, some social justice stuff in mind, but not always necessarily going down only that path. And, you know, Steph and I both have different perspectives. And also, we're campaigning to be the queerest podcast on the internet. So, like, you know, we have goals that we're trying to hit.
No, but I mean, but I
different perspectives, you know?
Yeah, that's what you have to do. I think you have to go, like, my experience is different than other people's experience. My perspective is going to be different because of that experience. You know, the dynamic that you two have together is going to be different than the dynamic than other people have together. And like, we're all so like, everything's so subjective. And I think that's the other thing, right? Is like, some people aren't going to want five white dudes talking about Star Wars. They're going to want something different. Where did those people go? You know? So I think it's really important for anyone who wants to start anything, you know, to not worry about how many other people are doing it and whether you're worthwhile in it or not. Yes, you are, because you're you. No one else is you, you know, exactly. And you bring value to the conversation. You bring value to this art form. Like, podcasting's an art form. You bring value to it, you know? So I just wish that more people would have that confidence, because I think that's something that I was missing for so much of my life, was that confidence in how do I bring value to it? You know, like, even when we started, you know, like, I still fall victim to it sometimes. It's a constant battle, right? Like, I'm like, oh my God, Anne's way more talented of an actress than I am, you know? But while I might never be an Anne-level actress, I do bring my own special quirkiness to a role that I play, you know? I'm not her, but it doesn't mean that I don't bring some form of value, you know, and I have to remind myself of that. And, you know, I think the world so easily knocks people down, and we don't always remember to bring ourselves back up.
Yeah, we've got to do that. You know, there's definitely a lot of people I look up to in either podcast or similar things, and they just do, they're really, really good interviewers. And I hear some of the questions they ask and the ways that they bounce off of, well, not bounce off of, but kind of bounce along with their guests and their hosts. And it's like, wow, I would have never thought to do that. This person's a genius. And I think about the stuff that I say where it's like, oh yeah, I remember that one thing you said. So there just is like a lot of, there's always different vibes and different mindsets to have. So yeah, there's definitely room for all kinds of people. And I think we have our unique perspective. So.
And I think you have to remind yourself too, Dom, that there's probably, you know, someone sitting somewhere that listens to your podcast thinking those same thoughts about you. Oh, wow. This great perspective, and I wouldn't have thought about something that way. Or, you know, I think that joke that he made was hilarious. How come I'm not that funny? So, like, I think it's so easy to put everybody else up on a pedestal without realizing that someone somewhere is putting you up on that pedestal, you know?
Absolutely. Hey, you know, thanks for the pat on the back. I'm feeling nice and energized.
See? I got your back.
Hell yeah. Hey, check this out. You've said that I think the words you may have used were uber dork, I think.
Uber dork. Yeah, uber dork. Yeah.
So we are nerds, geeks, dorks, dweebs, weebs, whatever you want to call it over here at Character Reveal.
Love it. We
have a segment for the second half of our show that's sort of like nerdy questions, you know.
Okay.
We say rapid fire, but we're giving up on that. It's never rapid. It's more like, here's some questions.
Also worth saying that, like, it doesn't take up another hour and a half. Like,
okay.
Half is also subjective.
See, now I'm nervous. Now I'm like, did I oversell my uber geekiness? But I think I can hang. I think I can hang in the uber geek world. So
It's not about testing or anything like that. It's just hearing about your tastes and stuff.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, we don't hold with the like gatekeepery, like, okay. Like if you don't know. If you don't know this about comics, then you don't even like comics, do you?
She ranked the Star Wars movies wrong.
To be fair, all rankings of the Star Wars movies are wrong. So, like, there's not a right one. So, Steph, you want to kick this off for us?
Yeah. Let me look at our cool list of questions.
Nice.
Cool old list. So, start with a hard-hitting one. Is there a moment in a piece of media that always makes you cry?
I cry.
Are
everything.
You a crier? I am also a crier, so this is a hard one for me.
I cry at literally everything. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Whatever it is. Cartoons, I cry. Comics, I cry. Books, I cry. I think I cried reading Harry Potter to Jude the other night. Like,
amazing.
Like, you know, it was like we were reading through the very first one again, and you know, it's the part at the very end where like Dumbledore rescues Harry from Professor Quirrell, and I'm just like sobbing while I'm reading it, and I'm like, why am I crying? Like, literally, I cry at everything. So, defining moment of my life, crying. There's just so many. I wouldn't even. I wouldn't even know where to pick.
Right.
So
yeah, my weakness, because I'm also a big crier, is quiet moments in plays.
Oh yeah.
When I'm crying, and are you familiar with Miss Saigon? At the end, after the gunshot goes off and the theater is silent, I don't know if you maybe saw the touring Broadway cast of that in 2006 or so. Mm. It was me who went into the just echoing silence of the Phantom Center.
Yep. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I feel you. I've cried. I even cry at things I don't like. Like my son
crying because you're bad.
I don't know what it is. Jude, my son, is in the room with me. He's playing Roblox right now, so he'll probably roll his eyes or whatever as I say this. But he really wanted to see this new Scooby-Doo movie, hate Scooby-Doo. I'm sorry, that's going to be controversial to some people.
That is a hot take.
I've always hated Scooby-Doo. Ever since I was a kid. Scrappy-Doo, worst thing that ever happened in cartoon history.
I mean, even people that like Scooby-Doo will agree with that. Okay. That's the common take.
Okay, good. I'm not alone in this thought. So he really wanted to see this new animated one that just came out. And we rented it. And I'm sitting there just trying to not grate my teeth the entire time because I just cannot stand it. And it gets to the end and it looks like one of them, Scooby or Shaggy's gonna die. And I'm crying. I'm like, I don't even like these people. I don't even like them. And I'm crying. Something is wrong with me. So
that's the power of good storytelling, I'd say.
I can't believe you're gonna spoil Scoob for us.
Too much. Oh my goodness.
Okay. I feel like that also can lead us into our another question. Besides not liking Scooby-Doo,
all right,
do you have any unpopular fandom opinions?
Wolverine, I hate.
You had that on tap. I respect that.
Yeah.
It's like you were like, fuck that guy. I'm so excited to have a chance to say fuck
Wolverine.
Man.
So is it like Wolverine in general, like the Hugh Jackman version, or is there something specific, like a costume?
I grew up an X-Men fan, hardcore. The world of the X-Men was introduced to me when I was about 9. It's when the Saturday morning cartoon came out. And I think my father was like, holy crap, they like something that I could sort of maybe participate in with them. And he started taking my sister and I to the comic book store every other week when we got our allowance money. And we would split. So I would get 2 of the titles and my sister would get the other 2. And then we would read them and trade them back and forth. And I wanted to be Storm. Storm's my all-time favorite superhero. She's kick-ass.
Good taste.
Kick-ass. And it would make me so mad that everyone loved Wolverine because I just felt he brought nothing to the team. He had a bad attitude. He wasn't a team player. He was a jerk. He was just, but everywhere you looked, it was Wolverine cutouts, Wolverine this, Wolverine on merchandise. And I wanted the Storm action figure so bad, so bad. And my mom called the toy company. That's how much I was bugging them for this, because you saw her on the back of the box, but you couldn't get her anywhere. And I was devastated. And so my mom called the toy company and they're like, oh yeah, we don't make her anymore. And I was devastated. And I'm like, you can fucking buy 30 Wolverine action figures, but I can't get my one Storm. This woman, I know she's not real. I try to remind myself that, but it's hard. This woman fucking ran the X-Men without powers. She was in charge of a superhero team when she didn't even have her powers. That's how badass she was. But no, let's give all the accolades to the dude that, barely...
this grumpy old Canadian man.
Yeah, Harry and Grunts, let's, throw accolades at him.
Yeah, we could go find some guy with a knife. We don't need Wolverine.
Yeah, exactly. oh my God. I don't know. I don't know if it was just unfair rage put at Wolverine, but like I just hated him so much and everyone loves him. So finally we were at a comic book store and they had a Storm action figure hanging up, and my mom, it was me, my sister, my mom, and my grandma. It was the comic book store by my grandma's house. And we asked how much the Storm doll was. And the guy was like, $60.
Ugh.
And my mom was like, yeah, we can't get a $60 action figure. Sorry. And I cried probably for like 2 days straight. I was like...
Just inconsolable?
Yeah, inconsolable, wouldn't leave the bed. Finally, they were like, this will be your early Christmas present plus whatever. And it's like the middle of summer, right? Like,
and I'm like, yeah, this is whatever. You're borrowing from a while from now.
So we went up, we bought Storm. I was the happiest kid in the world. And then
hell yeah.
I still have that Storm action figure, and I've come to learn that she's worth about $5. So, but God damn it. That $60 Storm was worth it to me. But yes, I just hate Wolverine. I just hate him. Like, he brings nothing. And you had this perfectly marvelous person who deserved everything, and she got nothing because everyone fucking loves Wolverine.
I think a lot of people would agree with that take, especially given now. Like, we could always use more Storm in our lives.
Yeah.
The character, not the phenomenon.
Not the phenomenon, yeah.
As we watch for like three different tropical storms heading our way, it's like, we don't need, no, we meant a lady, please.
Literal storm.
Where's Halle Berry? We need her help.
Oh, wow, that's my other unpopular opinion. Halle Berry is the worst Storm.
I think people would agree with that. There's been petitions to get like a new Storm, like maybe a dark skin Storm, you know, like the comics and stuff like that.
Well, the new girl.
I had a rough time with comic movies, honestly.
Yeah. I feel like the new girl that they got for the newest ones wasn't too bad. But I really felt like back when the first X-Men movie came out, they just should have gotten a no-name actress. You know, get a dark-skinned, no-name actress to, like, come in, and that can be her defining role. And then she'll be super famous because she'll been this kick-ass character. But, you know, like, that's who Storm needed to be, you know. That's when I was young, that's why I was like, they just should have gotten like some badass kick-ass girl that no one knew, and she could have just transformed herself into Storm, and then she'd have been skyrocketed into fame. And I like had all these grandiose things in my head.
I was gonna say, you have given us an excellent transition into another question.
Oh, nice, go me.
Which is, if you lived in the X-Men world and had a mutation that made you qualify as a mutant,
yes,
but not a mutation that would get you on the team, what would that power be?
I was like riding along. I was ready to answer. And now all of a sudden I'm not
ready
to answer.
You can tell us your what your team power would be.
So as much as I wanted to be Storm, logistically, I knew that I was scared of heights and I wouldn't be able to fly. So I would have been the worst Storm in the world. So my backup power was, my second favorite was Nightcrawler.
I love Nightcrawler.
And to be able to teleport would be so flipping handy, right? No more plane rides. No more 6-hour car rides. Just no going to work and sitting in rush hour traffic. Like, just teleport,
just be there,
your butt wherever you wanted to go. So I was like, you're like reading the question, I'm like, teleportation. And then like all of a sudden I'm like, oh, that wouldn't get me on the team. That's oh my goodness, I don't know.
The example I give to people is, so I used to, back in the day when we started this, I worked at Barnes & Noble, and I was I was always on the floor and I was answering the phone, and I would say like, Barnes & Noble Cranberry, this is Stephanie. And people would be like, hey, Bethany, like, can you help me find a book? So I feel like my power would be like a similar power to Mystique, but only being able to transform into people named Bethany.
I love it. I think mine would be, do you guys remember the TV show Heroes that was on briefly?
Yes.
Yeah.
There was a girl. Now, yes. I think they made her.
Quentin Panettiere was in it.
Yeah. And I think she, like, qualified as a hero, but, like, I would lame her power up ever so slightly more. But she was the character that could do anything she saw. So like she watched like a chef like cut a tomato into a rose and then she was able to do it. I think that would be my power, would be like doing super dorky stuff that I watch on like YouTube and then being able to do it. Like, oh, I just watched someone like beat Bowser in Super Mario Brother. Now I can do it.
That would be so cool. Just
random ass shit like that. I think that would be my mine.
I can roll a d20 on command and always get a 20.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to help me against Magneto, but I definitely
always get my saving throw.
it's like I can throw cards real good. Oh, cool! Like Gambit. And like no, just like regular cards. There's nothing special.
I can always get them in the hat. That's what I can do. Love it. Oh wait, no, I have another one.
Hit us.
I would be able to transform. This is a girl like shape problem because I think other girls will be able to agree with me. Stephanie, get me if I'm right here. I feel like man's clothing is very, you go to the store and you're like, I'm a 32-32 and you pick a 32-32 off the shelf and it fits you. But we cannot do that because they have decided that we all have hourglass bodies. Which we don't at all. So I think
just do a measurements.
Yeah. So I think my power would be that I can make any outfit fit my body or make my body fill out any outfit that I like.
That's good as heck.
Is that good?
I thought that is a good power.
All right. That's mine.
I'm like always rolling the freaking dice. I've been doing so much internet shopping and like, it's like when it comes, what will it be? Will it be a thing that fits me? Will it be a thing I have to like, somehow find a printer to find a label to send back?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's rough. It's so rough. And then now with like the postal service being so slow that like now I'm getting shirts I don't even remember that I ordered and I don't remember where they go back to or anything. I'm like, where did I get this? What is this from?
The worst.
Oh, that's not a problem I envy. That's I feel for you there. The only analogous problem we have to that is far less bad. So it's really apples to oranges. It's just that I'm sure anyone has is just being between sizes.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, this comes in 30 and 32. I'm like, what about 31? They're like, you don't do odd numbers here. Get out of here. So any clothing related stuff, I props to that. The question we have, it's related to acting.
All right.
They're making a new Netflix show or movie. It's coming out. It's called People That Have Been on This Podcast or whatever.
Okay.
Who would you want to play you in a show or movie?
Now,
they don't have to look exactly like you or anything, or they can, but like, who would you want to
do what I want? So years ago when I was at, I still work for corporate Giant Eagle, but this was happened probably, I don't know, maybe 6 years ago. We, as a department, decided that if there was a Giant Eagle movie, we all had to pick who were to play us. And so this went around the department and people would nominate people to play other people or you could sort of pick. And I think everyone picked for me. I don't even remember her name. Shit. I was going to say Julia. It was not Julia Louise Dreyfus. That's the Seinfeld woman. It's Julia something.
Julia Stiles?
No, she is dark hair and she always plays like the smart aleck friend. And she was really big in like the 90s. Oh crap, can I Google it real quick?
Google away.
Julia.
Actress's name Julia.
Actress.
The first one I see is Julia Roberts, but
that's no, cool. Maybe her name is not Julia. I think she was in The Other Sister and she played the other sister.
Never heard of that.
Oh geez, Julia now Norman. I really am dating myself.
No,
Juliette Lewis, that's what it is.
Juliet. Lewis. Okay.
Juliet, not yes. Julia. Juliet Lewis, yes.
Got
she's snarky. She's always the sidekick. I always in my life view myself as like the sidekick character, not the actual main character. So I just feel like it's very fitting.
Okay. Okay.
Gotta cast yourself in the lead role of your life, Darcy.
That's true. I'm sitting here giving pep talks and then see, I'm telling you, it happens. You gotta catch yourself when you do it. So
That's fair. Good point. The corollary to this, what character would you like to play in a show or movie? So it could be a voice role, it could be, but you know, like live action role. it could be a documentary. Who would you want to play in a show or movie?
Wow. My son just whispered in my ear because he's come over and he's been listening for the last little bit. And he's like, tell them about the movie you were in. So we can go back to that because that's a funny little story. Who would I like to play? I would like to be in a Jane Austen movie. I'm a huge Jane Austen fan. I love his history and historical stuff. And I think I always was like, if I would ever be a famous actress, I would want to do historical dramas so that I could like take home the costuming. or fantasy as well, like sci-fi fantasy as well, because that's also some badass costuming. So
Jane Austen in space.
So yeah, Jane Austen in space. There it is.
There's got to be a YA novel.
I'm sure there is. To the Reddit. So the movie I was in was, I am briefly in the movie Fathers and Daughters with Amanda Seyfried.
Oh, nice.
I play Jeannie, who is a drunk at a bar whose husband propositions Amanda Seyfried's character for a three-way.
Ah.
So if you
tell them about the movie you were in, Mom.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I actually showed him the scene. That's how good of a mom I am. I'm like, watch me, you know, proposition Amanda Seyfried for a three-way, bud. Your mom's famous.
She was in Mean Girls. So, I mean, like,
that's peak, you know?
Exactly.
Amazing.
So I guess speaking of Jane Austen, one other thing I recall of hanging out is you had a murder mystery once at your house.
Yes, and you participated and did beautifully. I did. Sir,
was I Mr. Darcy? I don't know Jane Austen.
I
was like a hoity-toity guy.
Was it a Pride and Prejudice one?
It was. Well, it was.
Were
a
you
bunch...
Mr. Collins' dom?
No, he was not. He was. I do believe he was Mr. Darcy. He yes.
Pulled my hair back and everything. Wore a little vest because I actually have a suit that has a vest. Very dashing, had white gloves and everything.
He played the role of a pompous douche brilliantly. I'm just joking.
Came natural, super easy, as I am the best at improvisation.
It was a mixture of a bunch of characters from all of her novels.
Hey, what character did you play?
I was Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
Okay.
The most stuck up, pompous lady in the Jane Austen world.
Truly. I'm going to have to get you, I'm working on, again, in my IRL life, a Pride and Prejudice murder mystery called Pride and Premeditation.
Nice. Yes.
Once we have copies to send out, I'll have to get one to you somehow.
Yay! I'm so excited.
First in a trilogy. After that one, we're doing, I think, a Sense and Sensibility one and a Mansfield Park one.
Oh, nice. I love it. I love everything about this.
I'm just here for the puns. Very nice. One of the questions we have is, what kind of elemental bender would you be from Avatar?
But well, we already sort of hit that.
We covered that.
Yeah.
That's kind of why we laughed about it. For context, I like to call myself an airbender.
Okay.
A waterbender.
I dig it.
Dig water, like swimming, go with the flow. Yeah. You know, I'm an oldest child, so I'm also like just like the mediator, like, person type. I'm just like, I just want everything to be all right.
Can't we all be friends? I love it.
Steph, do you want to get one more of these before we
call
close
it
out?
Night? Yeah, this is one of my favorite ones. So if you could cross over any two pieces of media, whether it's in like, or like a real life person, drop them into a different thing, what would you cross over? So like, I mean, obviously like the low hanging fruit is like a Jane Austen thing and something else, but
yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing, right?
It
is I'm like,
that.
I can pick, like, I could put, like, mutants in Jane Austen's world.
True. Pair your great, like, your two great loves.
It'd be like the X-Men in Regency times.
I feel like there's some really good fan art that could come out of that.
I think so, too. Have you, the historical Disney princess dresses.
Like, oh, yeah, they're so pretty.
I love those. So, yeah, could you imagine, like, historical X-Men costumes?
That would be awesome. Man, I'm thinking of, there was also, like, someone did Finn and Poe from the the sequel trilogy of Star Wars in like kind of like Napoleonic War like kind of uniforms that was going around the internet for a while. It was also very cool. Like, I love it when you dress my friends up, my imaginary friends.
See, that would be a great cosplay. See, now you really have me going. I love dressing up. I feel like I'm borderline getting like, I have to start looking at like the over 30 cosplay stuff because
all cosplays work. There's no age on them.
I know. But like, I think the most successful cosplays are when you like look like the character. And I'm upset because there's no real famous people that look like me. And I'm like, someone who's famous has, like, someone has to become famous who looks like me and do, like, a really cool sci-fi movie or comic movie so that I have something to cosplay as. But, yeah, that gets me, like, super excited. I'd be like, could do some, like, Jubilee Jane Austen Rogue. I have to think of... See, I didn't get to share with you guys my Storm costume story, which is a classic, but I don't want to make your thing go over.
Hey, well, I mean, we could save that for the, we can have you on again sometime.
Yeah, exactly. Come back around to it.
But I will ask before we run out, have you done any cosplay before? Like, I know you do art, which we didn't talk about again some other time. We'll link you for sure. Have you participated like at some of the
yes I have, and I blame my need to have perfect costuming on the Storm incident from when I was a child. So the cosplay that I have done, I've spent far too much money on to have other people make it for me because I suck at sewing, so that I can be as screen accurate as I can be. But my most favorite one is not a super screen accurate one. I had a woman she'd make screen accurate Game of Thrones costumes. And I had her make me a bustle dress Daenerys Targaryen. Mm-hmm. And it's
very cool.
Amazing. Like the embroidery and the detailing that is on this thing. It's insane. But yes, I love cosplay. I love dressing up as someone else. I don't know why. It's very freeing.
So fun.
Tons of fun. We've done it before. Like we were Finn and Poe. We had Kylo Ren and Rey.
Nice.
Yeah, gotta let you the real secret to cosplaying when you're making your own costume. I think we dropped this on Anne last week too when we talked, but is to get as many of your friends to participate as possible, because there's an inverse relationship between how good your individual costume has to be. If you're in a big identifiable group, everyone's like, oh, holy crap, look at that whole big group of whatever, and don't care about like the individual details. And like, I do so, and I like try to put like the effort in, but I am one of the only sewers in our group, so I end up making costumes for a bunch of people, and like
you get roped into everybody else's.
By the end, I'm like, no one looks at the back of a costume.
I can just super glue this. Yeah, that's pretty much how I do it if it's on me. But I love group costumes. Nothing makes me happier than a shit ton of people in a themed costume. So if you guys ever need someone
to fill out
for your next group cosplay, please call me, because
seriously,
I'm just like, oh my god.
Man,
I get so excited.
Hopefully things are opened up by next year.
I was gonna say, someday we'll be able to gather in groups in public again.
Yes, and when that happens, you call me.
Hey, we'll let you know. We got to figure out our group. There's so many cool things.
Just do a Regency X-Men group.
Yeah, there it is, Regency X-Men.
Everybody has at least one X person that they appreciate. I'm calling Quicksilver now if at all possible. I like. Gotta go fast. It's kind of my
your brand.
Thing.
It's true.
Darcy, thank you so much for joining us
tonight.
Thank
you for having me.
We want to extend that thank you to you. Hopefully we talked about some stuff that was interesting to you. Hopefully we had
some good fun. I had so much fun. So I hope I didn't talk your ears off, because I know I get long-winded and rambly, but I had so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, that's the whole point of the show.
Yeah, people hear us every week on whether it's an interview or like our recap show. People hear us all the time, so new voices are great. if people want to find you on the internet or social media or anything like that, is there anywhere people could find you?
Yeah, the best place to find me, I don't do Facebook very often. I suck at Facebook. So if you want to find me and you want to see what I'm up to, your best bet is to travel over to Instagram. And I am Darcy, D-A-R-C-Y, dot Farrow, F-A-R-R-O-W. And you can see my illustrations that I'm working on every week. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
And you do some time-lapse stuff too, I think, right?
Yeah, I am. I recently got I splurged and got an iPad, and Procreate has a really nice feature where you can export time-lapse of your illustrations. So I've been throwing up some progress time-lapses so people can sort of follow along with like how my sketches evolve into illustrations.
That's super fun.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I'm such a sucker for time-lapse things. Like anytime it comes across like my Facebook timeline or something, I'm like, I'm just going to stop scrolling for a second and see what happens.
Like, yeah. And then like 3 hours later, you've fallen down the rabbit hole. That's exactly what I do.
Very nice. And Steph, do you want to kick our social media business?
Yeah, I can do that. So if you want to find us on the internet, you can find the podcast on the podcast catcher of your choice by searching for Character Reveal. You can find the podcast on the internet at characterreveal.simplecast.fm. You can find us on Twitter at Character Rev, on Instagram and Facebook at Character Reveal. You can find Dom anywhere he wants to be found on the internet at Brother Dom. Instagram, not Facebook, but you know, Instagram, Twitter, whatever. Probably on Overwatch or something. I don't know.
Don't find me on Overwatch.
Don't find him on Overwatch. you can find
me. I'm bad.
You can find me at Captain Steph on Twitter, The Snow Queer on Tumblr, and Hella Steph on Instagram. And I think that's the business.
Yeah, I think, you know what? That's the business. That's how the cookie rolls down in the shed.
That's how we burn the bridge that the chickens have hatched on.
Oh, I love it so much.
Thanks for thanks for that, Steph. Again, thank you so much.
You got a snort, Darcy, out of me. I love it.
Funniest queerest podcast on the internet. It's Character Reveal. Let's go, baby. But yes, thanks, Steph, for putting that out. Darcy, thank you so much for joining us. Again, glad you had fun. Listeners, thanks for rocking with us. We'll catch y'all again in another 2 weeks for another interview. Next week again for the Geeklies. And until next time, see you later.
Bye.
Bye.